Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Don Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
It's would have been, if this were not Sunday, St. Anthony's feast day.
Yes.
The whole Sunday takes precedence sort of thing, but it's still, you know, St. Anthony Day. Anthony of Padua, right?
Anthony of Padua.
Because there are other Anthonys, Anthony of the Desert.
And... yeah. And we celebrate them all because we are equal opportunity celebrators.
We are equal opportunity patron sainters.
Yes.
And so we, since we have an Anthony, we celebrated by going to get ice cream.
We went to Walgreens novelty and picked up some, what are they called, drumsticks?
Yeah, drumsticks. They're the novelty ice cream cones with chocolate coating and peanuts.
Man, those were my favorite when I was a kid.
Mm.
I didn't really like the peanuts. I used to pick them off, but...
yeah, as
with
everything.
The best part was when you get down to the bottom of the cone and there's like that plug of chocolate at the bottom.
They do that on purpose.
Right. To keep the ice cream from dripping out. Right. But when I was a kid, we would all get down to the bit and like compare who had the biggest chunk of chocolate at the bottom of their cone.
Oh, you didn't just bite that off first?
What? No, that's the best part. You save it for last.
It's the best part. You eat it first.
What kind of a monster eats the best part first? You save the best for last.
No, the best part is the best part. Jump in on it. And thus, our two different philosophies of life.
Our personalities. I do not understand. I do not understand.
Do you eat the best part first, or do you save it for the last? You are a savorer. I am an experiencer. I jump in. I suppose we could have gone out for ice cream. We haven't done that in ages.
We could have.
The only place really to go, or that's really close, is the Cold Stone Creamery, okay. Which has not been great.
The service isn't great. The ice cream is okay. What really annoys me is that they have basically one serving size, one scoop size, which is ginormous, and I don't need that much ice cream. Like, it's... three times as much ice cream as...
How ironic is it? You can't buy a gallon of ice cream at the store. They're getting... then it was a half gallon, then it was a quart, now you're getting a pint and a half for the same price. But when you go for a cone, they're getting bigger!
Right?
Isn't that kind of wild?
I actually... I like ice cream places that offer you a very small size, because...
the kiddie cone is as big as anyone needs.
Well, except the last time we ordered a kiddie cone... it was too much ice cream.
What do people who come to hear from other countries, like in Italy, you get a gelato. We would consider that a kiddie cone. It's small.
It's a little teeny tiny scoop.
It's as much as you need.
And you know, the nice thing is when it's a small little tiny serving, you can have like three or four or even five flavors of ice cream, but they're all little teeny tiny scoops. So you can have like a bunch of little flavors.
Try a bunch of things.
And try a bunch of things. Yeah.
Well, and then there's the whole... it melts too quick when it's just a giant cone. Like, who can eat that fast? You get an ice cream headache. Yeah. Well, this Cold Stone. There is that place down in Bridgewater. We went there once. Pleasant Meadows, I think it's called.
Right.
Not too far. You could do that. There must be other ice cream places around. But this worked. It was easy enough and cheaper.
And he was happy, and we were all happy. We ate them in the backyard, and we had a nice...
yeah, and then they got to play with the new swimming masks.
Oh, yeah. I also picked up some goggles while we were at Walgreens, because I keep...
last time we were at my brother's house swimming last week. Was it last week? I think it was last week. We didn't have enough swimming goggles. And frankly, I'm getting to the point where I want swimming goggles. Because my eyes are always burning after being in the pool. So, yeah, maybe. So, St. Anthony's Feast Day. Then also this week was Isabella's Baptism Day.
That was the 11th.
The 11th.
Right.
And that's also the anniversary of my first day working at the Archdiocese 13 years ago.
Right.
Wow. Right. That's a long time ago.
This year it fell on the Feast of the Sacred Heart, so it was like a double whammy.
And for that, you got a pint and a half of ice cream.
right. She wanted
Oreo cookie ice cream.
She wanted the Oreo cookie ice cream, and the container was shaped like the ones that, you know, what did it used to be, like 2 quarts or a half gallon?
Half gallon. That's literally the same thing.
Right. Oh, that is like the same thing. Duh. But it was a pint and a half. Like, they had shrunk the 2 quarts into a pint and a half.
Oh, my gosh.
It was just ridiculous. Which was enough for everybody to have a small bowl of ice cream.
Which is as much as we need. But right. We're still paying for the same size, like what we got for 2 quarts last time. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. So, hey, celebrate while we rant about things getting smaller. So we did that. And then Friday also, which was a few cigarette hot. I managed to get all my work done early in the week, and I only had a little bit to do Friday morning. So we decided to take the afternoon, lunch on, yeah, to go for a ride. And we went back to Scituate Lighthouse, which we went to literally, we didn't even realize this, literally a year ago, the same, like, a day off, like, one day
the,
off.
The next day off.
The same Friday a year ago.
Right.
That was really funny that we kind of decided to go. But it was not the best day of the week. It was a little cloudy when we got there.
It was fine.
It was a little breezy.
It was nice.
it was breezy. As a reminder, so it's a lighthouse, and then there's a long jetty that you can walk out on, and at the end of it is an aid to navigation that's like a framework. Looks like a scaffolding. There, but a lot more sturdy, of course. And the kids had a blast running like gazelles, like mountain goats, leaping from rock to rock. We took it slow because we're a lot older and wiser.
Yes, and older.
And older. And yeah, that was nice. And then I think of other, like, so, then on the way home, I wanted to get a Dunkin' Donuts frozen coffee because I'm addicted to that now. And we kind of drove around looking for one because it's this thing. It's like we're in Massachusetts. Just drive around a little bit and you'll run into one. That's pretty much how it works.
Into a Dunkin' Donuts.
Into a Dunkin' Donuts, right. And that's what we did. We found Dunkin' Donuts. Okay, so here's the question. As we were driving around, we're driving through this. Scituate is kind of a wealthy seaside town. And all the houses, vacation homes and regular homes, have names on them. They're like names. Like this tiny little cottage with 2 bedrooms. Intrepid. Freedom. To Gallant. You know, they had these very grandiose names for all these houses. And the question is how far can you go from the ocean and still name your house without it being weird? Like, do you have to be in sight of the ocean? Or just be in the same town that touches the ocean?
Uh-huh. This is your, like, weird theory.
You're right. Well, no, it's not a theory. It's a question. Like, yeah. I think about these things. You know, if you're in, like, the area called the South Shore of Boston, which we're in, even though we're half an hour from the ocean, and there's, like, 3 towns between us and the ocean, can we name our house? That's really what I'm getting to. I want to name our house.
No. I mean,
SS Titanic.
You could, but it would be weird.
And I want to put up a signal mast, like with the signal flags on it in the front yard. All the neighbors would be like, I want to be like the guy in Mary Poppins with the cannon on the roof.
The admiral?
The admiral in the roof, keeping time for Greenwich.
Okay, but he was an admiral.
And I can get a hat.
You are not an admiral.
I'm neither an admiral or an admirable for that.
He was supposed to be a real admiral.
He was literally a retired admiral. I get that.
Okay.
I get that.
You're not.
So is there like a law against keeping time on your roof with a can? Well, there probably is a law against keeping time on your roof with a cannon.
I'm pretty sure there are ordinances about shooting off cannon in the city limits.
I could like organize the kids.
Although evidently one of our neighbors doesn't realize
there are plenty of people in our town who don't know that.
Yeah, there are
fireworks.
There. It sounds like a cannon.
People are setting off quarter sticks. I mean, that's got to be a quarter stick of dynamite. That's loud.
It's very loud.
I have to say, okay, knock on wood, we're, 2 weeks out from the 4th of July or so? maybe three, two, 3 weeks. Okay, I'm looking at the calendar. Three, like, we're basically 3 weeks off of the 4th. No, we're exactly 3 weeks off of the 4th of July. No fireworks yet.
Last year was really quiet.
Yeah. Well, last year I attributed to nobody could go out of state to get to buy fireworks.
Right. They illegally. Couldn't go to they couldn't go to New Hampshire. So because the border was closed.
For those who don't know, you can't buy fireworks in Massachusetts. It's not legal to buy fireworks here, and it's illegal to go to another state and bring them back.
But people do it anyway.
People do it anyway.
Of course.
Even though the state troopers sit on the border, they have a guy sitting in the parking lot writing down Massachusetts license plates and then sit on the border and pull over those people as they come back.
And yet somehow they still manage to bring fireworks back.
Well, there's a lot of ways back through, and they're not doing it like literally every minute of every day. But yeah, it's still a bad idea. But people manage it, and they set off the fireworks in our neighborhood. So I'm in it. I'm in. I'm doing it. I'm going to form our kids into a pirate crew, and we're going to board the neighbors. Boarding parties! Yeah?
I can't even talk. I'm laughing too hard.
All right, mates, you dogs, scurvy dogs. Not you, the dogs in the neighbor's yard. They're really gross. No. Hey, if they can have dogs that yap all hours of the day and night, I can have a cannon. All right. We're way off. Rat hole. All right.
How much caffeine have you had today?
I had 2 cups of coffee. I had my coffee before church, and then I had iced coffee when I got home, and that's it. And then I've had a lot of iced tea. And I had Adele's Lemon Shandy, which was really good. Narragansett. Gotta grab a Gansett. Narragansett Brewery in Rhode Island. Famous local place. Dell's Lemonade. They get together. They made a shandy. Yum. I'm man enough to say I like a shandy, which is a fruity beer.
Sort of.
Sure. It's lemon. It's a citrusy beer. I don't like grapefruit ones, but I can't have grapefruit anyway. Anyway, moving on. On Friday, I was on the Catholics of Oz podcast. Our friends, Lindsay, Lino, and Caroline. Mispronounced your name. And those are our friends who are fellow SQPN podcast. They are from Melbourne, Australia, and they invited me on their show.
You know, I still have not listened to one of their shows, and that's really like...
They listen to yours, you know. Now you're embarrassed.
I know, I am. You know, I just...
Start with Let's Science.
I need to remember to download it to my iPad.
You don't listen
to my yeah. My phone.
Carolyn, Lindsay, Lino, don't be offended. She doesn't listen to my podcast.
You know, you did a radio show for how many years?
I did a radio show for what, 3 years?
I listened to 2 episodes.
Yes. And total. Neither one were ones that I was on.
Yeah, I'm really bad about listening to podcasts. I listen to The Daily Poem, which is about like less than 10 minutes yes. long, and occasionally to Mysterious World, which is
much longer, an hour and a half usually.
But really, the length of it, like I often say, I could listen to Mysterious World, but I wouldn't be able to finish it. So now I'm just going
to. Well, you just listen to it without the feedback, which you normally So American Catholic History, 20 minutes. Let's Science, 20 minutes. Definitely, you're going to have to listen to the episode of Catholics of Oz that I'm on, though, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Sure.
Sure. I'll put that right on my calendar. So I'll let you know when it's ready. I'll put it right on your phone for you.
I'm sure you will.
Yes. So I was on, and it was a lot of fun. We had a blast. We talked about a lot of the different shows on the network and what things that's going on. It was fun. Talking to the future. They were in the future. They're in the future now. Right now, it's Monday for them, even though it's Sunday for us.
Right.
Anyway, one of the things that was interesting was talking about the vaccination and the COVID differences. So they had a period of time when their lockdown ended, even though they hadn't had a vaccination, but they got to like 0 daily cases in Victoria, like without a vaccination.
Wow.
It was pretty awesome. And then they got to, but then they've been locked down again. There's been cases, and they were only just now getting the vaccine in.
Right.
So. Like they have restrictions, like they can't go more than 25 kilometers from home. They can go out, but almost everything is closed. So there's no reason, there's nowhere to go. Like it was for us here.
Right. Like that's like my friends in Canada.
It's been
pretty locked down there too.
So I think it was Lino who asked me, like, so with your vaccination, do you like when you're out, do you have to show your card to the police? Do they ask for it? I'm like,
No.
That would not fly here.
Americans have very, very, very strong opinions about having to show ID to authority figures.
Papers, please, is the way it sounds to us. Like, that's the whole Soviet Nazi thing that we conjure in our mind from our movies and TV shows.
Right. Like, the idea of having to show papers is like the Indiana Jones.
What?
In Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, he didn't have his he throws the guy out of the airship because he does, and he says,
papers.
No papers, right? Like, that's, I think that's the image that, like, most papers. Americans have. Like,
yes, we are, yeah. I mean, like, if a policeman asks for your license and he's pulled you over or something, we'll do that. But in general, I mean, even actually, police can't ask for your license. They have to have a probable cause. They have to have an investigation that they're undertaking. They have to have a reason. They can't just randomly, I need to see your ID.
Right. Like, if you're just walking down the street, you're not driving a vehicle. Right. They can't stop you and ask for
ID. You can't just stop you and say, I want to see your ID. You can't. Like, are you undertaking an investigation? There has to be some sort of violation that they're investigating. It's all the honor system. So basically, everybody can go anywhere at any time, even if they're not vaccinated, because it's the honor system.
Although, really, around here, like, so people who have their vaccines are not required to wear a mask.
Yeah, it's the opposite. Yeah.
But what I'm finding is that when I go to the store, I'm like the only person not wearing a mask in the store.
People are like afraid to give up their mask. Like, you're vaccinated.
Well, I don't know for sure that
it's been in the paper. Like, it's right. Like, they've been interviewing people.
But any given person in the store, sure. I don't know for sure.
Right. But in the newspaper, you have these, like, interviews with people, and it's like, no, I'm afraid to give up my mask. And like, you're vaccinated. You're fine. Go ahead, let it go. Let go of your
security
binky,
blanket.
Your security blanket. Like, you can let it go now. We're good. I don't know. It's just, again, some people have conditions,
compromised immune systems.
Yes,
that sort of thing.
And so it's even more important, even though they've been vaccinated. I get that, but clearly the interviews show that there are people who it's not about that. Even worse is the people like, I don't want to look like those other anti-vax people, so I'm continuing to wear my mask. Like, that's kind of dumb. But, you know, all right, you do you. Yeah. Anyway, Catholics of Oz was great. That interview should be out in a few weeks. They have the episode with Archbishop Comensoli first. Evidently, the Archbishop gets top billing over me.
Yeah, well, yeah.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Anyway, I think it's awesome. They've had him on twice. He's actually asked to be on their show.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he asked them. So, yeah, it's really good.
Can I be on your show, please?
Yeah, he's recognized them as providing a really great, you know, apostolate to his diocese. And I think it's awesome. I think more people should listen to the show. Including you. So
I'm curious, just because I'm kind of fascinated with all things Australia. So
I know a lot of Americans are, which is one of the things I like about the show is Americans love Australia. It's as I said when we were talking, it's a country where everything wants to kill you, but the people are really nice.
My cousin actually immigrated to Australia.
Wow.
So my cousin Nicole, she lives there now.
Does she have a kangaroo?
She does not have a kangaroo.
No. Sorry, playing dumb American, like with Canadians. Do you have an igloo? Do you have sled dogs? I used to tease my friend Zoe all the time about that. She's from PEI. Anyway, let's talk about the library book sale.
Yes.
Finally.
I started.
This isn't buying books, by the way.
No, last spring, I started loading up a box full of books that I wanted to give away. I was, like, tidying up, and I was clearing the shelves, and I was so very happy.
This is what we do. Books come in, books go out.
Right. And then COVID hit, and the library shut down, and this box has been sitting in my bedroom for more than a year, and
there was a box in the car.
Right. And there was another box in the car. And even after the library started reopening, like, They opened the lobby, but they shut off the stack so you couldn't browse, but you could go in and pick up books that you put on hold, or that they could go get books off the shelf for you.
Mm-hmm.
But then the book sale tables were all covered over with tarps. So finally, they've decided to reopen the book sale. now that the governor has lifted all the restrictions. Yes. And the Friends of the Library announced that they were now collecting donated books. And so I happily trotted over
and
to
we said,
I happily trotted over to the library on Saturday morning and dropped off my one big box and a couple of smaller boxes of books. I probably could have found more books on the shelf to give away, but
I'm just looking through this room that we're sitting in.
But I was kind of busy this week and I didn't really have a chance to do a thorough scouring of the shelves, but I'm still happy I got rid of the big box that's been like an albatross around my neck.
Mm. And someone will get some nice books.
Hopefully somebody will appreciate them.
Yes.
And the library will make some money. And
gosh, I remember a few years ago, I brought like 4 big boxes to to them. I'm like, here's your books. I mean, it was a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so that's good. Good. We're getting things back to normal, cleaning some stuff out. I just mentioned Summer of Scouting. I had a meeting the other night with the committee for the kids pack, Cub Scout pack, and the boys troop. So there's a lot of overlap, as you might guess, between the two families, and at a restaurant, which was fun to be able to do that. And wow, there's a lot going on. There's a trip on a harbor boat trip to George's Island on July 2nd. There is a scout camp, and then there's another camping trip that's going to be a canoe camping to an island in a lake in New Hampshire. And oh my gosh, all this stuff. And they're doing fundraising, and it's like it, but like every weekend is something. It's kind of nuts. So it's the summer school. Like, it's like, finally we can do things. Let's do everything.
So all the things that we would have done this summer and all the things we would have done last summer too.
Right. This is what we're doing. Like, pace yourselves, people. Pace yourselves. Don't burn yourselves out. Yeah.
I don't think they're going to burn out. I think we're
going to burn out. Yeah. The kids might burn out. So anyway, that's the summer. I'm calling it the summer of scouting. All right, let's move on. Talk about food. Tonight for dinner, I made something new. It was a recipe from America's Test Kitchen called charcoal grilled barbecued chicken kebabs. Kebabs. And so this was, I think, a success. Pretty much everybody liked it,
except Ben,
who's a hard sell on things in general. But everybody else enjoyed it. I think Ben, like, maybe another time might.
He was having a hard night.
Yeah. So you make a barbecue sauce, ketchup, molasses, onion, Worcestershire, Dijon mustard, cider vinegar, brown sugar. You make a sauce. And then for the kebabs, this was interesting. So you take the meat, cube it, and then salt it, let it sit in the fridge for, an hour or so, and then dry it off. And then there's a mixture of sweet paprika, sugar, smoked paprika for the dry ingredients. And then this was interesting. You take 2 slices of bacon and you process them into a paste in the food processor.
Uh-huh.
And then you coat the paprika mixture and the bacon onto the chicken. And so what happens is as it cooks, the fat from the bacon basically keeps the chicken moist. So it doesn't dry out too much. So it wasn't too dry.
This sounds like a recipe that's not a quick recipe, though.
It's not the quickest recipe, but it wasn't too bad. I think it went pretty fine. I don't think,
I'm just wondering, this doesn't sound like a weeknight recipe.
How long did it take me? I think I started around 4:30 and we ate around 6. I mean, I was steadily doing things, like going from one thing to the next and the next, so it's not like I could make other dishes in that time.
Right.
So
I made some coleslaw and some potatoes.
Right. But I liked it. It was good. I think
it was tasty.
Yeah, it wasn't too spicy. We have some spice-averse eaters, and it wasn't. We got the sign of approval on that, so it worked out. I liked it, and it was fairly easy to cook. It didn't burn or anything like that. I followed I followed my best instincts on cooking it, and kind of
right.
A little bit of what they were saying in the instructions. But yeah, So good.
I find instincts are often better than instructions.
Yeah. Well, I've been grilling long enough. Like I know what I know when something is going to burn and when it isn't, where to put it on the grill and that sort of stuff with the charcoal. So I got enough experience there. So charcoal grilled barbecue chicken kebabs. So you made pistachio muffins this week.
I did. I love pistachio muffins, but they're one of those things where all the recipes I can find online start with boxes of pistachio pudding. I have not found a pistachio muffin recipe that doesn't require pistachio pudding mix.
I'm not sure you could make it pistachio-y enough, that's a word, without pudding.
Right. So I had you get a couple boxes of pistachio pudding, and mm-hmm. I made a double batch of muffins. Now, I think that the batter was too thick, and I think part of the problem was that I was using the pullet eggs, which are really small, and it called for 4 eggs, and I used 5, but I think I probably should have bumped it up to 6 or 7.
Yeah.
They were really little
pullet eggs. Pullet eggs are small.
And so the batter was a little bit too thick, and
so it didn't rise really?
No, they rose really beautifully. They were just a little bit dense.
Okay.
But the other thing is, I think next time I make them, I'm going to add a little bit of extra almond extract to bump up the flavor a little bit.
Okay.
Like it was pistachio-y, but it wasn't
as nutty
as the muffins I've had in the like from the grocery store. Like I wonder the bakery.
If they sell pistachio extract.
But honestly, based on flavor, I think that the pistachio muffins in the bakery are using almond extract. Like the nutty flavor is bitter almond. It's not right. Pistachio.
Right. I think because cooked pistachio is one of those things that doesn't really taste very pistachio-y. Like our brain doesn't say, that's pistachio nut.
No.
It's like so really, pumpkin pie.
Right. I think the bitter almond is the way to go.
Yeah. Well, they don't sell pistachio extract.
They don't. I could have told you that.
Yeah. But it was good. I liked it. I think everyone liked it. Except for Lucy,
who is a very hard sell with muffins.
She's a tough customer.
She's like, she took it a little nibble, and she said, no, I don't like this. Everyone else loved them, though.
Well, I'm not going to call her Sweet Tooth. That's my segue.
Okay.
Into what I watched this week. There's a new Netflix series.
Called Sweet Tooth.
It's not a documentary. So it's a post-apocalyptic sort of thing.
Is it? So it's fiction?
It's fiction.
Okay.
So it posits a pandemic, much worse than the one we've just gone through, where there's no cure and it's very virulent and transmission is much faster.
Movie pandemics are always worse than the one we've just been through.
Well, otherwise it's not all that dramatic.
Right. I mean, I have to say that like the pandemic has been bad, but not like movie pandemic
well,
bad.
Well, even just by historical measures, getting off of the movie topic for a second. By historical measures, this has not been a very bad pandemic.
It's not Black Death level.
It's pandemic. Right. It's not the transmission rate has but not been high. It's got a very long incubation period and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, this is a relatively mild pandemic as pandemics go. But in this movie or series, it's a series on Netflix. It's much more virulent, and it also takes. At the same time as the pandemic is reaching its worst,
uh-huh.
there's a event which happens where all of these children being born are being born as animal-human hybrids.
What?
They're being born with animal characteristics. So some kids will have wings, and other kids have like rabbit noses, and this or deer antler nubs, or
that's weird.
Yeah, and. At some point, one of the characters is like, it's Mother Nature who's angry at us for all the bad things we're doing to the planet. And this is her way of cleansing the planet or something like that. I don't know. But really, what's the most of the story, at least in the first episode that I watched, is this father and son, and baby, really, at the beginning. They go out into the depths of Yellowstone. Yeah, I think it's Yellowstone National Park. And live there. The father's trying to get away from society because things are really bad. And they're out there for 10 years. And he teaches the kid never to go beyond the fence, you know, the border of the park, and, you know, all these things to avoid people. And we find out that people are hunting these kids for whatever reason. Like, they're not human, I think. And in fact, to have one of these kids who can speak is considered strange, which is very Planet of the Apes-y. Anyway. I only watched the first episode. A lot happens. I don't want to spoil anything. There's an interesting character who shows up near the end of the episode, who I think is going to be there through the season. A former professional football player, like a big linebacker type. Like, you see him early on on TV in the early part of the episode, where he's playing football and he's on the screen, but he's sort of in the background. But he's there enough where you're like, there's a reason they're kind of showing us this. And he shows up later and he's just this guy, like, he's survived so many people have died. Not sure where it's going. Kind of interested. I might watch another one or two of them, but the kid is endearing, no pun intended.
Oh my.
I did not intend that pun. But he's intent on going to find his mother. That's his motive. It's his quest. It's a quest story.
Right.
Right. So he's going to go find his mother, who's in Red Rocks, Colorado, or something like that. We'll see how it goes. Something I watched by myself. But you and I watched the new Disney Plus Marvel series, Loki.
Loki. The first episode.
First episode. What'd you think?
I liked it. It was, I didn't know what to expect at all.
And it was weird.
Yes, it was. It had a kind of a sort of surreal Brazil feel to it.
Yes, yes. Very, very surreal.
But not quite as surreal as Brazil. I mean, it wasn't quite that level of.
I've only seen clips of Brazil. I've never seen the movie.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, well, considering, yeah.
I mean, I like Tom Hiddleston. Loki is a fascinating character. And I mean, just in the first episode, his character arc was pretty interesting.
Loki in the first Avengers movie comes across as he's the villain, 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 villain. But over time, he becomes a little bit less of a villain, a little bit less in each movie. And so by the time Endgame comes around, He's not really a villain at that point. I mean, still Loki, which means he's an unpredictable, chaotic character.
Right. He's still the trickster guy.
By that point, he's kind of on Thor's side.
Right.
So in this one, though, it goes back to the timeline is that this is the Loki from the original Avengers movie taken out of time into this place out of time. And so he kind of goes through that journey rapidly in this episode.
Which was interesting. Like, they wanted to have the character reset, but they didn't want to completely reset him. So they figured out how to kind of
rapidly move him along.
Take him along some part of that journey.
Right. Right.
Which was interesting. Like, I feel like there's very similar to the first episode of WandaVision. There's lots of questions and very few answers yet.
Right. Right. And I think that's clearly what they're doing here is they're opening up this box and it's like, we're not telling you much. You just got to trust us. We're going somewhere.
Just go. You're along for the ride.
Right. There's going to be a lot more under the hood than we know.
I actually kind of like the experience of going for a ride, not knowing where a show is going, where a story is going.
Well, you and I both liked Lost, right? Even right to the end.
Right.
We're unlike a lot of people.
I enjoy sometimes just going into a movie theater cold with no expectation at all
that.
About movie. Like, I don't like to see the trailer. I don't want to read the buzz. I don't want to have a synopsis of the plot. I don't want to be spoiled at all. I want to, like, I don't know what I'm sitting down and getting into.
I want to experience the movie or show or book as the creator intended it to be experienced, which is as it unfolds.
Right. I mean, a lot of times, like for WandaVision, I felt like I had read enough of the chatter online, even though I was kind of trying to avoid it, that I had some ideas of what was going on. I mean, I was not, it was not an unspoiled experience.
Right.
Let's just say that. So I'm kind of glad that I'm caught up now in the MCU so that I can watch Loki without being spoiled.
You've watched everything. You watched Falcon and Winter Soldier, right?
Yes.
Okay. So you've seen all the movies.
I've seen all the movies except I think the second Ant-Man.
Okay. You've seen Doctor Strange?
Yeah.
Okay. I kind of wish I'd watched that with you. Okay. So yeah. So the second Ant-Man.
Oh, and I didn't watch the Thor Dark World.
Okay. That's fine. You don't need to watch it. Don't worry. You didn't miss much. The second Ant-Man is important for Endgame, but since you've already seen Endgame, it sets up Endgame, basically.
Right.
As far as Loki, Owen Wilson is great.
I love Owen Wilson. He's so fun.
I always enjoy Owen Wilson, whatever he's doing.
Owen Wilson always plays Owen Wilson, though.
Yes. He does. He's like Robin Williams. Like we were saying, like, he shows up and you could tell he's ad-libbing these lines.
That line is so Owen Wilson that nobody could have even written it for him because it's just like so off the wall, but it's totally him.
But it feels like there was a line where he's talking to the woman who's the judge and he kind of says on the side, I feel like I'm always looking up to you. And it's just the sort of thing that some funny guy says to someone like off the cuff. Like this joke just occurred to me, and that's how it comes. And it feels like that's an ad lib line.
Right.
Now, if that wasn't ad lib, that's a really talented writer who knew how to write Owen Wilson. Let me ask you, the nose, the prosthetic, nose? His nose in it. Did
Owen
you notice
Wilson's
it?
Wilson's nose.
Yeah, it looks like it's broken and bulbous.
It does. I don't know.
Is it just that he's aged a lot since the last time I've seen him in something?
I don't know.
It's very strange.
Why would I know?
I don't know. I'm just throwing out there something I noticed in this one.
Yeah, he does look like he has a broken nose. I don't know if that's him or a makeup character.
If there's a reason for that, yeah. The TVA, the transient, the time variant authority as a device, interesting. The timekeepers, I gather. I'm not a comic book person, so comic book people would know better. But I gather the timekeepers are the new Thanos, the new
supervillain, the new bad guy.
Because what I do know is that the next phase of Marvel movies and shows is about the multiverse.
Right.
So and they're the keepers, the timekeepers and the TVA are the keepers of the multiverse and the sacred timeline. So something tells me they're either allies or they're the enemy. And I kind of feel like they're going to be the enemy. So we'll see.
Well, they certainly feel Kafka-esque.
Mm-hmm.
And arbitrary.
Yes.
If they're the good guys, then they're actually, you know what who they remind me of? They remind me a lot of Umbrella Academy and the time traveling people there who are like trying to maintain.
Yes.
In Umbrella Academy, they have the time travelers.
That's what it reminded me of.
Who are trying to maintain the timeline.
Yes, yes. Oh, well, right down to the anachronistic design aesthetic. In the Umbrella Academy, it was very 60s.
I mean, I know Umbrella Academy is also a comic book thing.
Right.
But it's not Marvel, right?
Right. It's not. It's independent, Dark Horse. Graphic novel, so
right, but there's a similar feel to it, and I didn't realize this until actually we were just now. Like,
yes,
I suddenly realized what it was that Loki was reminding me of, and it's Umbrella Academy.
It really does.
It's got a similar vibe.
It's got a timekeeping authority that who have advanced technology, obviously, but whose design aesthetic is old, is 50, 60 years old,
and who seem kind of chaotic
and arbitrary
and
not exactly good.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's just interesting to think about. Huh.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder, I mean, I don't know, like, if this is something that's come, if the Loki stuff comes out of the comic books. I think it does. Does TVA predate the Umbrella Academy?
Is there an influence going on there one way or the other?
Yeah. Interesting. Well,
I have no idea.
Yeah. That's a good catch, though. That's what it was reminding me of. So Loki is dropping every Wednesday, new episodes.
I I'm on board.
Yeah, me too. All right. So you're still working on your novel.
I'm still working on my novel, the third in the Ibis trilogy, which is called Flood of Fire. I have to say, I'm liking this one a little bit less now. Like, there's this whole plot line that I'm just not very invested in which two of the main characters who you've met in previous novels are having an adulterous relationship. And I just, it's spending way too much time on that in too much detail. And I just, but the rest of the story is good. I just really kind of want to skip that part of it because I'm not, I don't care. And I really, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's it interesting. It sounds like the rare trilogy where the third book is not better than the second book.
I mean, in some ways it is. Like, I'm seeing where we're going to start to pull the characters together again who've all been flung apart. But it just this one plot line, I kind of want to make it go away.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's going to be going away soon, and I'll be happier.
Good, good. Well, I'm still working on Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir.
Right.
It's gotten really good. Like, in the last part of the book, it's mm-hmm. taken a turn in an interesting direction, and wow. I love his hard science approach to sci-fi with a very fun comedic, you know, edge.
Right.
It's not like slapstick, but it doesn't take itself seriously. Too much hard sci-fi takes itself way too seriously and becomes boring and tedious. This is definitely not that. And it's really interesting. And I wonder, like the first book, The Martian, he wrote it just as his first novel. But sometimes I wonder, like when someone has a first novel that's huge like that, whether they go and gets made into a movie, whether mm-hmm. they go into subsequent projects thinking of it, how would this work as a movie?
Right. Does this have that feel? Like, how would it work as a movie?
I don't know. It would be hard. I don't think it does. I think his second book, Artemis, felt like this. He was making a book that could be made into a movie. But this, there's a lot to it that would be hard to do as a movie. I mean, there's elements of it that would be hard to do. Not impossible, not today. But with Ready Player One and Ready Player Two, Ready Player Two felt like I'm making a book to be made into a movie. And it suffered for that. It was not as good. But so far, Project Hail Mary is good. I'm enjoying it. So that's
cool.
I'm reading a lot slower this year than I did last year. I'm way behind in my reading progress.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's longer books.
Could be.
I mean, I read the Dresden Files last year, and those went quick.
Oh, those are
16. I read fast. 16, 17 books, whatever it is, in a month and a half, two months.
Right. Those are binge books. Yeah. Like, you really do speed through. They move quickly.
I need to do more. I need to spend more time reading as well instead of wasting my time flipping through social media.
Right.
Yeah.
And
especially when there's nothing new on social media. What am I flipping on this for? Read your book. Anyway, moving on. Let's talk about today's mass readings, which were really good. This was the parable of the mustard seed today.
You know, I've heard this one. I can't even tell you how many times. And sometimes you get a new take on something that's so familiar, and it's like, wow, I
never thought of it that way. Yes.
So we had a visiting priest.
Well, he's not one of our assigned priests, but he's a retired priest who regularly says mass.
Right. He fills in
Father Williams. Father William Williams. Literally, that is his name. Father William Williams.
What were his parents thinking?
I don't know.
he started off talking about like how things are looking up. The churches are reopening. The COVID restrictions are being lifted. Vaccination rates are up. COVID case loads are down. Things look really good. That was an interesting intro because then he sort of segued into.
Now let's talk about all the bad things.
Let's talk about all the bad things. Let's like think about like flipping through the newspaper or watching TV news, and like the world is, you know, full of all sorts of
really, really wars and violence and pestilence and
bad stuff. And he says, you know, where is the kingdom of God when you're like flipping through the newspaper and looking at all this bad news? where is this?
Where's God and all that?
Yeah, where is the kingdom? And then we talked about the parable of the mustard seed. And he says, you know, it starts really small.
It's in the small things.
And he talked about like the very the small things in which we find, in which we bring the kingdom to those around us. And he talked about the temptation to come back with a biting retort when someone has hurt you. And when you push down that temptation and instead you turn to forgiveness and reconciliation, that is the kingdom of God. And I really liked the idea of like personalizing it, making it about me and what I can do in daily life.
Every time you don't tweet that snarky comment.
Right? just the little things in which we can bring peace,
grace,
love, grace to those around us. And yeah. Wow, it was really, I mean, I feel like I'm not doing it justice because it really was profoundly moving to me. And I don't know that I can convey that in my narration of it, my recounting of it.
If you want to see it, you go to the Facebook page for St. Edith Stein Parish in Brockton and look at the recording for the Mass for, I'll see if I can get a link for the Mass for June 13th. Right.
But I was left with a question, which was the first reading is one I do not remember ever having heard before. And, you know, sometimes readings hit you that way, like, of course, I must have heard it before because it's in the cycle, right? Every 3 years. But something about it really like grabbed my attention and I just did not remember ever having seen those words before. It's from Ezekiel. And it starts off with like much of Ezekiel. Thus says the Lord God, I too will take from the crest of the cedar, from its topmost branches, tear off a tender shoot, and plant it on a high and lofty mountain. On the mountain heights of Israel, I will plant it. It shall put forth branches and bear fruit and become a majestic cedar. Birds of every kind shall dwell beneath it, every winged thing in the shade of its boughs. And all the trees of the field shall know that I, the Lord, bring low the high tree, lift high the lowly tree, wither up the green tree, and make the withered tree bloom. As I, the Lord, have spoken, so will I do. I mean, that image of the Lord tearing off a shoot from this really tall cedar from the top of it and then planting it somewhere else. So right. We're talking about a gardener cutting a shoot and then transplanting it.
The top of a tree is the growing bit.
Right.
So he takes the bit of the cedar that's still growing, the growth bit. I don't botanists are tearing their heads. Here's a hero right now as I'm saying growth bit, but they and then plants it and in on the mountaintops of Israel. So Israel is already majestic and big, and but this will grow from that and grow higher. This is a reference to either or both Christ and the church,
right?
Which grows out of Israel, which grows out of the chosen people.
Yeah, and I'm wondering too if the image of the cedar on the mountaintop doesn't sort of resonate with the idea of the temple, which was made of cedar.
Yes.
On the mountain. So maybe there's that. I mean, I know that you often get this image of the
cedars of Lebanon.
The cedars of Lebanon. It.
But the temple is made from the cedars of Lebanon.
Right. So it's interesting, like God transplanting the grand cedar tree.
Right. Well, the cedars of Lebanon were, for the people of that era, were our sequoia. If you were to translate it to, you know, American idiom, it would be sequoia, the greatest trees. The cedars of Lebanon were famed for their height and breadth and their strength. And so a cedar is a strong tree. And so not only does it resonate with the temple, but it also resonates with the cross and the tree of life of the Garden of Eden, which the cross was, which is a type of the cross.
Right. So it reminds me of the kids book that we have, the three trees.
Yes. One tree becomes
a ship.
Right. One becomes the
the ship. And when it becomes the boat that carries Jesus across the stormy Sea of Galilee. Sea.
Yeah. There's one that becomes a feed trough, which
then later becomes the manger.
The manger.
In which the baby Jesus is laid. And then the third is thrown onto the pile, and it seems like it's been
discarded,
and then it's made into a cross, and Christ is crucified on it, which seems like the worst to the tree, who wanted to be, he wanted to be planted on the mountaintop and grow and touch heaven. And
well, I think the giving tree is riffing off of this this part of the Ezekiel,
possibly, yeah,
because wanted to be on the mountaintop. So right, so this tree is the tree of life, the cross, the church. It's Christ Himself. I mean, it carries right. all of those meanings.
I feel like that Jesus Himself is definitely riffing off this. With the birds of every kind shall dwell beneath it, and every winged right. things in the shade of its boughs. When He tells the parable of the mustard seed, He uses that same imagery of all the birds coming and roosting in.
But how interesting is it? So in the Ezekiel, it's a shoot taken from the grandest of all trees.
Right, planted. From the cedar, the top of the tallest cedar.
Right, whereas this is the smallest seed that God is going to take and going to plant and grow a mustard, you know, the mustard plant, which is, in this case, as I looked it up, some scientists think it's the black mustard, which is a plant that can grow up to 9 feet tall. A bush. It's really a bush. It's not a cedar. It's not a sequoia, but it's still large. And it's something that people hearing this would be familiar with as a very large plant.
And the birds of the sky can dwell in its shade.
Right.
Which is really interesting.
Yep. Yeah. Somewhere else, I think one of the other synoptic gospels refers to it as this mustard seed becomes the largest tree,
mm-hmm.
which is not technically true, but.
But poetically speaking, I can see where that's also pulling out from the Ezekiel, the idea mm-hmm. of this tall, majestic cedar tree.
Right. So, yeah, I think Jesus is saying the kingdom of God grows out of is this tree of Ezekiel is the kingdom of God.
Right. And it grows from a very small little seed that I'm planting here, which
among these disciples.
Right. He's planting the seed. The seeds of the kingdom are the parables that Jesus tells.
Right.
And they're these little tiny stories. There's stories about sowers sowing seeds, and there's stories about, you know, fathers and sons and judges and widows. Right. And they're these little tiny stories, and yet within them contain all the lessons that we need in order to build the kingdom of God right. in our lives.
Well, He gives everyone this, what they're able to handle, what they're able to understand or to take. So the majority of the disciples get the parables, but to His own disciples, He explained them to the apostles. They get
right. the
explanation.
But I love the idea too, that he introduces it though, with the idea of a man to scout, would scatter seed on the land and would sleep and rise night and day, and the seed would sprout and grow. He knows not how. Like that, there's this mystery in the way that the seeds are scattered. That like the seed might.
It's like chance. Yeah,
it seems like chance, but it's also sort of this mystery of God, where the seeds are planted, and then sometime when we're sleeping and going about our business, they're growing, and we're not even necessarily knowing how they're growing.
Well, we often talk about that in evangelization, where we share our faith with people, and we don't know, like, they could be hostile to it, they could be disdainful of it, and walk away, and you don't know. That's the seed has been planted, but you don't know when it will take root, will grow, and sometime 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, it will start to sprout. You know, so you never know. And I mean, it's the same thing with your own children. All you can do is sow the seed, and the Holy Spirit makes it grow in the time that the Holy Spirit deems appropriate. So, yeah, definitely. So very good. Very good. Appropriate reading for this week. I think that should do it. What do you think?
Sure.
All right, let's take a moment first to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Tim and Marie M., Josh C., Mary F., Dustin P., and Timothy B. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue raising the bets in all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So, if you have any feedback for us, you want to tell us what you think of any of the things we talked about, you can do so by commenting at sqpn.com/bets, that's B-E-T-T-S, or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. We'll have links to various things that we talked about in our show notes at sqpn.com. Be sure to join the StarQuest fan club. Just text StarQuest to 66866. That's right, send StarQuest to 66866 and just follow the instructions from there. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.